We're going to call the House Finance Committee to order today, February 9th at 1:40. With us today is Representative Moses, Representative Kelly, Representative Foster, myself, Chairman Meyer, Vice Chairman Stokes, Representative Petula, Representative Jewell, Representative Hawker, Representative Weirich. So we do have a quorum to conduct business, and today's business consists of three bills: House Bill 274, Public Accountants; House Bill 318, Eminent Domain; House Bill 334, Municipal Property Tax Deferral and Exemption. Before we get started on our bills this afternoon, is there anything to be brought before the committee? Okay. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and go to House Bill 274. The sponsor is here, Representative Hawker. And before we turn it over to Representative Hawker to explain,
Mr. Chairman,
bill, Representative Stokes.
I move that we adopt the House Finance blank CS for the sponsor substitute, the CS for the sponsor substitute, House Bill 274, it's version 24-LS0176 / C, Bannister, dated February 8th, 2006.
Okay. Any objections to that being before us? Okay. Representative Hawker is objected.
That would be Representative Weirich.
Oh, sorry, Representative Hawker. Yeah. Okay.
We're practically twins.
Okay.
I'm the tall, good looking one.
Right now I object.
I'm trying to make an accountancy bill a little levity here.
All right. Well, perhaps after the CS that the motion was made and was brought forward at the request of the sponsor. So perhaps when we hear the changes, Representative Weirich will remove his objection. So Representative Hawker, would you like to go ahead and?
Is this a bill before us for purposes of discussion, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'll remove my
objection. Okay. All right. Very good. Then we do have the CS. And Representative Hawker, would you like to explain the bill and the new CS before us and the changes that we made?
Mr. Chairman, just yes. Would be your intent to support this committee substitute on the floor as well?
Yes, sir. It would.
But you're assuming it's going to pass.
Yes. So,
okay, go ahead, Representative Hawker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pleasure to be in front of a committee where we get to spend so much time, and it's kind of fun being in the hot box here for a change. This particular bill has been described by the Anchorage Daily News as the least interesting bill in the entire session. To that end, we've decided to prove to you that it's not, so I've got a 30-minute PowerPoint. I've got testimony on the statements on standards of attestation engagements so that everyone can appreciate the importance of this bill. But likewise, I also sort of figured that maybe if we kept it short and we can go to as much depth as you want on this, you will get what you asked for on this bill. We can also truly view it as a high level or as detailed as you'd like to go. In response, Mr. Chairman, to the difference between the original bill and the CS, the CS resulted largely from the Occupational Licensing Department's legal review. They brought in their legal people actually after we'd had the bill heard in Labor and Commerce and looking at it. Came up with, as lawyers are wont to, a number of, frankly, some good comments, good observations, so it's truly non-substantial but technical changes throughout it. So we agree with all of the changes that have been reached. The changes that have recently been discussed with the Board of Accountancy, the Alaska State Society of Accountancy, and everyone supports the changes as they came through. What the bill in its entirety does is, this is another step, and you guys are probably destined to be dealing with these as long as I'm in the legislature. I'm trying to move Alaska's accountancy standards into the 21st century. Our accountancy standards were largely written in the 1960s, very shortly after statehood, and truthfully, they are archaic standards, and they don't reflect where the profession itself and where industry has moved to in this world. The accountancy world has established, or comes forward as many professions do, with what they would like to see as uniform laws adopted throughout states across the nation. That's embodied in what's called the Uniform Accountancy Act. The Uniform Accountancy Act, of course, the ideal just to go out and say, let's just adopt it, but again, even within our own profession, my own profession as an accountant, we We've got dinosaurs in my profession as well. I'm actually kind of proudly define myself as one of those dinosaurs. I'm not ready to adopt all of the provisions that the Uniform Accountancy Act is headed to yet. But this bill sort of sliced and diced through some of those issues over a multi-year process with the Board of Accountancy, the accountants, the board, and the state society, and came up with a sort of a preliminary revision of our state's occupational licensing statutes for the practice of accountancy. The changes in here really do a they're targeted at one level. You'll see a lot of what's just called, we call it conforming language. And in this case, it's when we adopt a word that is now used today, such as all our statutes use the word accountancy. Accountancy is just not a word in existence today. It is the practice of accounting. So, again, with things as just as minor as that, but as we've changed, you know, through that, we've had to also and reconcile the difference between a certificate and a license to practice. You know, your certificate that you get demonstrating your quality to practice and the actual license, but even though you've got a certificate, if you don't have a license, you're not allowed to practice. So we've made consistency changes throughout statute. We're making a move to move the state closer towards uniformity with other states that will allow and facilitate both Alaska CPAs and other state CPAs to conduct business interstate, to move between jurisdictions. And frankly, that's important in that it really does keep Alaska competitive in a world of where right now, it's like for most professions, accounting, legal, and engineering talent, all states are competing for the best and the brightest out there just to get people to come to work, and that's part of the important aspect of this. Another one that is really driven here is we're moving the state towards much stricter regulation of public accountants who provide audit services. That's one of the most important services, which is one where a bank, an institution, you as an investor, someone relies on the work of a CPA in believing what the CPA has reviewed. The financial statements that the CPA has audited, you are relying on in making a business decision. This bill particularly ties down the regulation there and sets us up to where, again, sort of the national movement, which is to put increased board supervision and regulation of accountants providing attest functions, that is, auditing functions. We've also got a mechanism that grants temporary practice privileges to public accountants for out-of-state firms. We used to just kind of say we do it. We've added specific provisions on how and when and why we'll do these things. Again, tightening up our statutes, which 40 years ago was left particularly vague. We are also making it a point. We've defined some peer review requirements. Peer review is an important part of public accountancy. All firms that perform functions have to be peer reviewed. Again, as an internal quality control, we're moving ourselves more in conformance with what are national standards these days. And again, I guess kind of at large there, that's the real nuts and bolts of what's in here. You'll see so much if you look through the sponsor statement of conforming language. And again, that is really just where our lawyers have gone through with the help of the accounting profession and said, this is just how we clean up the language to give us, I think, a better body to go forward as we do try to keep bringing Alaska's accountancy statutes into the 21st century. So, Mr. Chairman, in short, that's kind of what we're about here. Allow one indulgence. We had a lengthy discussion in Labor and Commerce Committee where this bill went through before, dealing with concerns by non-licensed accountants, some concerns that their practice might somehow be impinged by this. We've resolved all those problems. You'll see the bill came out of Labor and Commerce, I believe, with a full clean slate of due pass recommendations. I believe that might be a record for anyone that's been through the Labor and Commerce Committee lately. We'd certainly be looking for a clean slate of due passes out of the Finance Committee.
All right. Thank you, Representative Hawker. I think what happened in Labor and Commerce, you just wore them out.
We would be happy to do that here, sir.
They were happy to sign due pass just to get you out of the committee. But I disagree with the newspaper. Not the first time. This is not a boring bill. It's very, very exciting. Representative Stoltz.
You know, I thought I read that editorial, Mr. Chairman. I thought they were talking about the sponsor, but I might have missed that.
Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, that is entirely possible.
No, this is a Just generally, that issue of license and non-license. Are there issues with CPAs like with the bar association where you have? Is it where folks, as far as the practicing, and just how does that interface?
I think when
you get a CPA, what's the
through the chair
representative? Well, yeah, I guess you understand the question I'm asking. Hopefully.
Well, I'll take a stab at it there. It's not an easy question to ask through the chair. What is the difference between a licensed accountant in this case, and what does the license require, and non-licensees? What do they do? How do they do it? And how do we what do we do that impinges or might affect that line that's drawn? Key point about the license: to get your license as a certified public accountant, a license to practice, your minimum education requirements, and we specifically, in fact, this bill puts some tightening of those provisions as well. We also say, guess what? We want you to have a degree in accounting, oddly enough. Now, believe it or not, before this bill was passed, we still allowed a degree in any subject to become licensed as a CPA. But again, a particular educational qualifications, and then particular having passed the Uniform Certified Public Accountants Examination, which is a multi-day examination given nationwide. Passing that, applying to the Board of Accountants, you can become your license to practice as a CPA. Practicing even then, in order to perform audits yourself, requires further experience underneath working at an apprenticeship program in order to get your own license to practice without supervision. The non-licensed accountants, there is no education, Representative Curtula could be a non-licensed accountant, and she wants to hang out a shingle and say, I keep books, I do taxes, all that sort of thing. It's a non-licensed practice, but it's all binding non-licensed. It's also unregulated, so there's very little regulation on, the assurance of quality of the work product or the adherence to a certain professional standard. The Alaska, and we've had actually a very good testimony from former Representative Jeanette James in Labor and Commerce, that Alaska has some of the, honestly, its least stringent regulations of non-licensed accountants of any state in the nation. It's a carryover of our accountancy laws here that are then here over 65 years old. That is of concern to the licensed accounting profession, but the non-licensed accountants also have a very, very strong constituency here, and certainly don't want to see that privilege invaded as we in the licensed accounting profession try a little harder to put a few more sidebars and create some more reliability. So the fine line we walk is between the custom and practice that's developed over time by folks practicing in the practice of bookkeeping, accounting, tax, that don't have the certified public accounting designation, and those that do. So it's a little bit of a vague line, but we've gotten this bill around any issues that were a problem to the independent accountants. This bill does not in any way impinge on any work that they're doing currently that is within, currently contemplated in statute. Mr. Chair, I hope that got somewhere towards your question, sir.
And what's the record for people failing the CPA exam, I wonder?
It's
not the 20.
It's been a long time since I've been in the details there, but it used to be on passing in the first time. I think the national numbers were sort of like in the, 25-28% range. It's a very difficult examination.
I remember my college friends, they had a lot of trepidation. I just wonder if you had another character in that field.
Actually, I would love to brag on that one. At the university that I graduated from, the year I graduated, my graduating class, including myself, set the national pass rate of any university in the nation, where we passed 67% of our graduates the first time out.
Mr. Chairman, that's all. I'm on overload right now, so I've got all.
All right, very good. Thank you, Mr. Stoltz. For the record, Rex at home has joined us. Welcome. Do you have a question for Representative Hawker, CPA?
I do have a question. All right.
Former CPA.
Hold the chair. Your impassioned presentation here is important. But what I was interested in is how do you truly regulate the different accountants throughout the state of Alaska? Whose responsibility is to make sure that they are professional and they're doing what they should be doing?
through the chair, Representative Holm, that is a function of the state's Board of Accountancy.
And who do they work for?
Through the chair, Representative Holm, the State Board of Accountancy is appointed by the governor and is an independent body, as is the and any one of the other boards and commissions established within state statute. Mm-hmm. Although, again, through the chair, if I may continue, sure. We have the stipulations about, you know, there's so many, whatever the right number is, and I could look it up for you here, but so many public members, meaning non-CPAs, so many persons with practice certificates, you know, there's some requirements on the individual members, or at least on the composition of the board.
Thank you.
Rick Nadler?
This doesn't affect bookkeepers, does it? Somebody claims to be a bookkeeper, advertises as a bookkeeper.
Through the chair, Representative Wyrock, no.
Yeah.
Through the chair, Representative Wyrock, it would only affect someone, and the provision in statute is that is holding out to, again, a current statute, isn't it, which is not being changed, says that a person may, you know, you have to be careful not to profess to have either the professional licensure or particular, you know, knowledge of accounting reporting matters. Let me get you the exact language, but there's that line that simply says what you can represent yourself to be as a non-licensed accountant, and they reach the point where you cannot represent that to be.
Because there's people that advertise, Mr. Chairman, bookkeeping services. They don't hold themselves out as anybody else other than somebody who can, quote, keep books, which a lot of people use.
And that would be particularly the language we use is they may not express or imply particular assurance or special knowledge or competence in issuing any report on books. But there is absolutely a 100% exclusion for anyone who is doing bookkeeping work for someone to simply, you know, basically to sign your name on the bottom of it, you know, say, I did this. But it's the giving a assurance of any kind on the substance of that bookkeeping work is where it crosses the professional line.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, I know you do have an amendment, but let's go ahead and go into the public testimony before we take up amendments. Let's see. Looks like we have Lisa Rogers online to testify. Is that correct?
Yes.
Lisa, are you with us?
I am.
Okay. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Lisa Rogers. I'm a CPA licensed to practice in Alaska since 1989. My license number is 1277. I have been working on legislative and regulatory issues facing our profession for at least 5 years. House Bill 274 provides a much-needed update and revision to the statutes governing the practice of public accounting. We are endeavoring to gradually conform our statutes to the Uniform Accountancy Act, which was drafted by the National Association of the State Boards of Accountancy, known as NASMA, and the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, known as the AICPA. NASBA is an organization comprised of the regulatory boards in the 55 licensing jurisdictions. The AICPA is a standard-setting body for the profession. Both of these organizations participated in drafting and reviewing House Bill 274. We also held several forums and workshops to develop consensus within the profession before presenting this bill to you. I encourage the committee to support this bill and move it forward for approval, and I thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Okay, thank you, Mrs. Rogers. Seeing no questions, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Mr. Chairman, yes. If I may, Ms. Rogers really deserves a great deal of credit for helping shepherd this through the drafting process, working with the public accounting community, and I would also counsel she was mercifully short on her presentation here for us all.
Was she at the Labor Congress meeting?
Yes, sir, she was.
Yeah, she. Okay.
She would be delighted to give you the 2-hour explanation of all the details here.
I listened to that once. Okay, let's go on to Don Ruling.
Yes, Don Ruling.
Okay, if you could, for the record, again, state your name and your affiliation, please, Don.
My name is Don Raleen. I am past president of the Alaska Society of CPAs. Currently, I'm the chairman of the Legislative Committee, which Lisa Rogers has been working with us for many, many years. And as Representative Hawker has talked about, is that we've worked on this bill for many years, with the biggest problem was trying to get some of the most senior accountants, maybe a licensed accountant, on board so they can understand that we're not really changing how a CPA becomes a CPA as much as we're trying to conform to language that is more uniform with, you know, within the United States, because we're looking at the future that we have a lot of accountants that are more mobile now, and we want those people to have the ability to practice in different states without a lot of different hoops they have to jump through. And Ms. Rogers has worked diligently, and as she said before, we have had many, many meetings with all of our membership of the Alaska Society of CPA, as well as all CPAs in the state of Alaska who are not part of our society, the Alaska Society itself. And we've also worked with, as much as we could anyway, with non-licensed accountants, if you want to call that, the bookkeepers and so on. So we think this bill is a very good bill now. We accept the changes that have come about for the February 9th, 2006 amendments or corrections, however you want to call that. So we would appreciate if the committee and the chair would pass this as it is. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Seeing no questions, thank you also for joining us this afternoon. We'll go on to Robin Wiebe.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Yes, hello. My name is Robin Wiebe, and I am an enrolled agent, and I am currently the president of the Alaska Society of Independent Accountants Northern Chapter. We have three chapters within the state of Alaska. And I just want to thank you for allowing my testimony here today. And I've been a resident here of Alaska for 46 years and in practice for the past 30 years. Just on behalf of Asia, I just wanted to say again that we have a membership body that services the accounting and payroll and tax preparation needs of approximately 60,000 Alaskan individuals and small businesses across the state. And so subsequently, in light of the broad population base that we service, we're very appreciative of the sponsors and committee members' support on our behalf to continuing to provide consistent service, especially to our small business clients. And it's an kind of an answer to some questions there that were just asked. It is Asia's job to, we're dedicated to developing and improving standards and practices of the independent accountants across Alaska. We are a state affiliate of a national organization, the National Society of Accountants, and that's what we're dedicated to doing, is increasing and maintaining professional expertise amongst the independent accountants. So I just want to thank the sponsor's amendment to this bill and his consideration on our behalf at this time, and to say that I am in complete support of the bill as well. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Wiebe.
Yes, you're welcome.
Is there anyone else who wanted to testify? Again, we're on Public Accountants, House Bill 274. Anyone here in the audience? Okay, seeing none. Anyone else online? Okay, seeing none, then public testimony will be closed. Just for the record, we do have Gail Berensky. Is that correct? Assistant General? Oh, you're right there. Okay.
Berensky, yes.
Thank you, ma'am. She is available if there are any questions. Okay, any questions for the committee members on what we've heard thus far? Yeah, Representative.
I noticed that you're going from 5 down to 4 years for reciprocity, and I'm assuming that must be a financial standard. Is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Fertulli, yes, that is the recommended standard.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, Representative Hawker, would you like to make your amendment?
Yes, sir. I would move amendment number 1.
Okay, I'll check for purposes of discussion. Go ahead.
The amendment really, you can see, even without reading the bill in context, you can see pretty much where this was an amendment brought forward by council, again, sort of reviewing their own work. They came up with a couple more nits. Point one is, just getting the paragraph reference correct, the B to a C. The second one is under quality reviews, which are a permissive issue in statute. They're mandatory in regulation, but permissive in statute. To have the language correct and consistent in statute, rather than having a required by, it needed to simply, allow the permissive statute, but the mandatory regulation going from required by to under. And then, revocation or suspension, again, it was follow the text, but it's cleanup language recommended by the Department of Law's folks here. We absolutely concur. These are, again, non-consequential, but nonetheless meritorious changes.
Okay, very good. Any other questions concerning this amendment? Seeing none, I'll remove my objection. That will be adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, anything else to come before us concerning this bill as amended? I guess there's a zero fiscal note, is that correct?
That is correct, sir.
Yes, I'll chair will entertain the motion if there's no questions for the sponsor.
Chairman, I'm going to move CS for sponsor substitute House Bill 274 Finance as amended out of committee with the attached zero fiscal note.
Okay, any objection? Seeing none, bill passes committee. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. We appreciate it sincerely.
Okay. On the balance, it seems to add up the ledger sheet.
All right, let's take a brief at ease while we wait for the next.
You might have maybe a new pattern of meeting for you.
Back to order. The next bill before us is House Bill 318, Eminent Domain. We do have the sponsor with us today, Representative McGuire. Representative McGuire, looks like Craig Johnson and Mr. Petzer.
That's correct, yes.
Okay, with the Department of Law. So I think with that, I will go ahead and turn it over to the sponsor to tell us what this bill's about. Representative McGuire, welcome to finance.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to be up here, Mr. Chairman. And you'll notice many members of this committee are actually co-sponsors of the legislation before you. So it's not just my bill. It's a lot of hard work that's come from a real cross-section of the legislature and of the state, respectively. The bill is simple in that it responds to a very well-publicized opinion that came down by the Supreme Court of the United States in a case called Kelo v. New London. And I know many of you have heard from your constituents about it for sure. The case involved an action on the part of a local governing body that made a decision to use the powers of eminent domain to transfer private property from one person into another for the purposes of a development. It was a shopping mall. And it went all the way up to the Supreme Court in a challenge. There were the property owners themselves were not all happy with that use of eminent domain. They were frustrated by it, wanted to keep their homes. And so it went all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, in a very complex ruling, there's lots of parts to it, that actually there are parts of it that matter a little bit in other places, but the most important part today that I'll talk about is that they upheld this local governing authority's ability to transfer private property to another through the use of the powers of eminent domain, and it absolutely sent shockwaves through the nation. Up to that point, I don't think any of us believed that eminent domain could be used in that way, should be used in that way, and was an outrage to many folks, many citizens. And so I started receiving the same phone calls that you all did, and through the interim, many of us talked over the phone about how we would respond. And the response is House Bill 318, which makes a very clear statement of state public policy that we will not allow the powers of eminent domain to be used for mere economic development purposes. That's the first half of the bill, and that is a very clear prohibition that we will not allow that to happen in any circumstance. We're not in the business as a government entity of deciding whose private property is more valuable than somebody else's, what private project is more worthy than another's. And we shouldn't be. And the powers of eminent domain really ought to remain a very narrow tool and something that we use in extreme circumstances so that the people retain their confidence in their government. The second half of the bill is an extension, and it does go beyond the ruling of the Kelo decision, but was brought up by others in the community, and it has to do with taking private property for recreational purposes. And in that half of the bill, just to make it clear for the Finance Committee, because there are amendments dealing with this, we chose to treat it slightly different. And what we did in that case was we said we won't have the outright prohibition in every circumstance of that transfer, but what we will say is that when it's your private residence, within certain boundaries, 250 feet, that we will go ahead and say that we won't allow that to occur. It is for this committee. There are amendments that will come forward. It's for this committee, and we have Peter here to give you his legal opinion about it. But it's for this committee to decide how far they want that to go. At the end of the day, the statements that I made, there were many amendments offered in the Judiciary Committee that frankly would have eliminated any reference to recreational use. And they came in many different forms. And my statement about it at the time was simply that this state has less than 1% of all property ownership in private hands. And so the majority of the land in this state is in the hands of governmental folks, because the state, the federal government, municipalities, and boroughs. And that for these recreational opportunities, we ought to be a little bit more creative, and we ought to be able to find those recreational lands among our public lands. And this bill does not do anything to affect the original eminent domain statute that deals with public-to-public transfers. But when you get into the area of someone's private residence, it really is their place of refuge. It's the place that many older Alaskans, I've gotten a lot of letters from them, have spent their lives, even in territorial days, investing in, putting their heart and soul in. They've raised their children and in these homes. And the idea that somebody could come along and say, you know, we think a snow machine trail or a bike trail is appropriate, and we're going to go ahead, we'll compensate you for sure, but we're going to take your house, is, to me, is repulsive to me. And so that's why that's in the bill. And I would be happy to take any questions. Craig Johnson in my office, who's also a constituent, has been working very hard on this. And I want to thank him publicly for the work he's put into it. And Peter Putzier has also worked very hard. And I want to thank you to you all here and your staffs, because many of you have been working with me as well.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative McGuire. And appreciate you taking on this tough subject. It does look like you have quite a few co-sponsors, so there is obviously a lot of interest in this area. President Jewell, you had a question?
Yeah. I was listening to your choice of words, as well as to what you said. And you used private residence. Is that different than private property, or are they meant to be the same thing?
Through the chair, Representative Jewell, it was meant to be different. And so I was trying to draw that distinction and draw attention to it in particular for this committee, because there are amendments forthcoming that might change that policy. In our committee, again, with forces fighting to eliminate the reference to recreational use whatsoever on one side, and then you had the other side of the spectrum, which was to say, let's treat it identical to economic development uses and say all private property, which is what the first half of the bill does. It's all private property. We decided to go the middle ground, which was to say that we would keep the reference in to recreational uses, but we would narrowly tailor it to a person's private residence. And there was discussion, and I think you'll have it again today, about cabins. Those are not, unless your cabin is your place of residence. Native lands was brought up. Private LLCs that might hold land that they've set aside in, let's say, 50 acres. That is not considered in that half of the bill. So that I did choose that word carefully so that the committee would be aware of that public policy decision that was made in the prior committee.
Any other questions, Joe? Okay, I'll come back to you, President Stoltz.
Thank you for your work on this, Representative Wire. Regrettably, I didn't get to come down to the Judiciary Committee and soak it all in. I've had a lot of phone calls and emails about referencing the Gruenberg Amendment. Presumably, Representative Max Gruenberg, one of the members of the committee, it wasn't clear to me, but can you just help me out just on constituent response and what the Gruenberg Amendment was or did, or what is it, was it incorporated, just the history of that?
Absolutely. Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, at the end, Representative Gruenberg chose to withdraw. It was amendment number 5. And so that is not incorporated into the bill. And what that amendment would have done is it would have allowed for local governing bodies essentially to have the governmental power to go around the bill. in a nutshell. And my statement on the record at the time was that it got in my bill. And I wanted people to be very clear that while I respect local authority and local governance, that this was my time as a state lawmaker to make a statement of public policy that I wanted to be very clear. And that if we created exceptions that allowed local governing authorities to go around it, in the end, ironically, you actually end up right back at Kelo, at the decision that was made by the Supreme Court. You will probably hear arguments today encouraging you to reconsider that decision, but there was discussion throughout the committee, bipartisan, that did not seem receptive, and in the end, that amendment was withdrawn.
No, I thank you for unwrapping that riddle or enigma of the Grunberg Amendment, because I was having a hard time tracking it down, so now we know that.
Oh, Representative Grunberg has a lot of amendments, so.
Okay. The other...
I might say, when you refer to the Grunberg Amendment, it's Representative Grunberg, member of the district committee, just
yes.
So people
welcome. And a good man.
And yes, and I was just reciting how it was presented to me, Mr. Chairman, and no disrespect to any member of this body. So just a shorthand. Representative McGuire, some folks have talked to me about another government entity that has eminent domain powers, and in fairness to them, they've never exercised it. They pass themselves off as a government entity sometimes and as a non-government entity other times, and that's the Alaska Railroad. Was there any discussion in your committee about the Alaska Railroad and its eminent domain powers, given that a big part of their profit center is real estate and often right near the epicenter of people's residences?
That's right. Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, no. The Alaska Railroad never came up for discussion in the committee. Yes, they are, as a quasi-public entity, they do retain eminent domain powers. What we chose to do in our bill was not to profoundly change eminent domain policy that we already had enacted on the books, but rather to make it clear that from private to private, this is how it would be. And so we chose to continue on the same eminent domain powers that are already in the statute. So that was never discussed. So the same folks that had it before are the same folks that have it now, and the exemptions follow that same way, so that common carrier, utility lines, and so on, which were respected in the original statute on public-to-public, carried forward in the bill. So that was never brought out for discussion.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on that, and I don't think it was the intent, the Alaska Railroad is a transportation corridor, and it's, but I was more referring to the real estate. Would they be limited under your bill from using their condemnation or eminent domain powers for, say, doing a hotel project that might adjoin land that they own, which is not totally a far-fetched idea? A possibility. It's a far-fetched idea, but not a far-fetched.
So he's saying from the other angle, if it were their property.
If you'll give us your name and affiliation, please.
My name is Peter Putzier. I'm with the Department of Law, and I represent Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, I apologize. I couldn't understand the question. Could you restate it for me?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And under this proposed statutory change, would an entity, let's just use the Alaska Railroad, I know this doesn't affect their transportation, but would they be prohibited as a government entity from exercising eminent domain for example, taking a private property or residence, as an identical distinction, for example, a hotel development project?
And before you answer, I'm going to jump in because the question is more clear to me now. The answer is yes. The answer is clearly yes, that the bill prohibits anybody, any governmental, quasi-public, anybody from taking private property and converting it into another private use for economic development purposes. A hotel would be that. So absolutely the bill prohibits that. What I thought you were getting at the end of your question was whether railroad property, how that was treated itself, and so if that were but there's a very clear answer, and the answer is yes.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I might just want to clarify, because it's one government entity to another,
I guess that's, I wanted to make sure it's government limiting another government entity, and I just wanted to make sure that didn't create a cloud, if that makes sense. As opposed to a government entity enabling a private property entrepreneur that's trying to do something.
Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, this bill only changes policy with respect to a governmental authority's ability to transfer private property to another private entity through eminent domain. That being said, I think I know what you're talking about. And in that particular project, there's a mix of land. So in the case of the private property that might be taken or seized for development of the hotel, this bill clearly prohibits that, because it's mere economic development. It's not transportation. It's not a utility corridor. There's nothing about it that rises to that higher level. Now, with respect to the part of the land that is public in nature, it's a very interesting question. And I had, I think, the same folks in my office asking me that question, and I went to the statute. I don't think it's immediately clear, because part of the use is, I think, a fishing pier, and there are some other things into it. So what I did was I showed them the parts of the statute that deal right now with public land and eminent domain, and they had a lawyer with them that was going to go through and review that. But I think it's a much more complex question, because it's part of existing law and existing statute dealing with public land and eminent domain powers.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Curtillo.
Thanks, and thanks for taking on the subject. My question first is about the exceptions that are in Section 3 of the bill. And I want to briefly get to talk to the sponsor, but I think that the attempt is to try to parallel what's currently in our law. But the ones that I'm really interested about, and I guess I'll go first, on page 4 at the top, it's subsection 3. It allows an exemption to look at private-to-private condemnation, private-to-private, if the transferred property is used for a private way of necessity to permit essential access for extraction or use of resources. So can you tell me, in particular, is that one that we already have in current law? And tell me also, is a private way of necessity, I need to define what a private way of necessity is.
Through the chair, Representative Curtula, what we wanted to do there was to address a very specific issue, and that was Article 8, Section 18 of the Alaska Constitution. And basically, we just quoted the language in that. It reads that proceedings in eminent domain may be undertaken for private ways of necessity to permit essential access for extraction or utilization of resources. And that was consistent with the bill sponsor's intent to address two narrowly focused issues, not to try and get into already existing authority. And so we did not want to imply that we were attempting to change Article 8, Section 18 of the Alaska Constitution.
Sure.
So Section 8, and I should have memorized by now, this is dealing with private to private, and are condemning for land development essentially. Is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Curtula, that's my understanding. Yes, any taking of private property to transfer to another private entity, such as Pfizer or some a Walmart, for example, those kind of transfers are what my understanding is that this bill is attempting to target.
Can you give me an example of how subsection 3 would work then?
Subsection 3, through the chair, Representative Curtula, I don't know exactly. I think that it would be a situation where there's some sort of natural resource development, oil, and for some reason the state were blocked from accessing those resources. Theoretically, this provision could be used as a mechanism to to access that oil.
So the coal bed methane leases come to mind, but if we've already got Section 8 of the Constitution, that would have to trump at any rate, wouldn't it? I mean, we really may not need to restate it. Do you think that's right?
Through the chair, Representative Curtula, I think that it was our intent here to make clear that this legislation was not intending to create any ambiguity about whether or not it was going to impact in some manner Article 8, Section 18. And the opinion was that it would be better to address that explicitly rather than to leave any ambiguity in that regard.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Weber. Section, following up on that, Mr. Putzer, a couple questions for you. In page 4, Section E, it describes the power of eminent domain not being exercised within 250 linear feet of an individual landowner's personal residence. So my question was, do we need to clarify that? What if the person agrees who owns that land that their land can be taken? This appears to me to be a blanket prohibition, and if that person says, yeah, you can go ahead and take it, would the agency say, well, we can't because it has to be 250 feet? Would they be running back to us and say, you have to amend the statute later to say, unless the person agrees?
Through the chair, Representative Weirach, that's an interesting observation. We had we addressed that on page 3 at D1, that there could be a situation where the landowner consents, and I'm not sure that analyzed, frankly, whether under subsection E we should have a similar outcome. So it's something I think for us to perhaps consider.
Yeah, I just thought, when I read it in Section D, I know you addressed it there, but since it's a separate section, and if there's a link by the private party, that maybe you should also clarify it there, because
makes sense.
As long as we're doing this, we might as well prevent somebody coming back with a statutory amendment.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Very good.
Follow-up question.
Sure. Go ahead.
This follows on Representative Stoltz's question, and I'd like a clear answer. Does the bill prevent a public entity taking private property for developing a public recreational facility or project?
The bill does prohibit a public entity taking private property to develop a public recreational facility, trail, and so on, if, after your amendment passes, the private residence owner does not agree. And if it would involve taking somebody's private residence in the 250, which is roughly 4.5 acres surrounding their personal residence.
Okay. Well, then here's the hypothetical is the classic scenario is what you see in the New Yorker cartoons where you've got 500-story buildings and right there you've got that little house with the mom and pop self-burgers. Right there in that little island of all the skyscrapers. So theoretically, you could have a harbor development with a mix of industrial, commercial, and recreational purposes. Shops, yacht clubs, offloading stations for fish landing, walkways, picnic benches. That was taken by a public entity to develop an undeveloped or underdeveloped harbor. But you've got a curmudgeon that sits there with a little shack, and you've carved out an island for that person that we're all putting all the sidewalks around, that's what we're doing with this bill. Okay.
Through the chair, Representative Weirach, that's precisely what we're doing with this bill, precisely. And it's again, my personal belief, curmudgeon or not, that one of the fundamental rights of being an American and being an Alaskan is the right to own private property. And it's not for somebody else to decide that their recreational trail, their recreational whatever, their economic development, shopping mall, and so on is a better use of my land than me. So I want to make that absolutely clear. That being said, should your amendment pass, there would be the provision that you have in the recreational area as well as in the economic development area to negotiate with the landowner. So that's first and foremost. Second of all, there is one other out that I will draw the members' attention to on page 4, line 9, that allows the legislature to approve by law the transfer of property. And it was a very difficult decision for me to put that in, but I became compelled after hearing a lot of different scenarios that you probably need an escape valve. And this one seemed to reach a high enough threshold for me that I felt comfortable. So if the legislature can get a bill through 40 members of the House, 20 of the Senate, and signed by the governor, you can get around it. And that would be in that very extreme circumstance. But to me, that's enough of a public vetting that it's got a high enough threshold that you really have people weighing in on whether that's the appropriate policy or not.
So in that situation, you theoretically could have somebody from Nome holding up a project from that might benefit Anchorage.
If a person in Nome lived in Anchorage and that was their private residence?
No, if it goes through the legislature.
Yeah. You could. But I found that most people from Nome are thoughtful and generally some of our better representatives.
Go ahead. My understanding, and maybe Mr. Putzer can clear it for me, in the City of Kelo case, what I understood happened is the city had set up a private nonprofit corporation to develop an area that was deemed to have economic blight, and they transferred property to another development of a shopping mall, and they also developed areas for public recreational purposes. Strictly speaking, it was the private property was taken for purposes beyond just a shopping mall. It was beyond a shopping mall, a walkway, a public facility, but it did include a shopping mall. Is that how Kelo is, what the facts were?
Through the chair, Representative Wyrock, the Connecticut legislature had authorized this, specifically authorized this entity that was ultimately involved to study and make recommendations for development projects, and it did involve the doctrine of economic blight, and there was a transfer, I believe, for two five facilities, and there may have been some other facilities as well. They were private facilities. I don't know the full extent of the transfer.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you. So our representative Parker.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, Representative McGuire, thank you very much for, I know you guys have the untold hours you've put into this so far. It's obviously critical for our own personal districts, people we represent, but it's good policy. This committee, Finance Committee, has historically stripped legislative intent and findings from bills, and we've tended to take the approach of putting it into a separate accompanying letter of intent. I had discussed this with your aide, and I was hoping we just might, for the record, be able to just document here why it is important that these intent and findings be included in the bill.
Mr. Chairman, with your permission, Representative Hawker, eminent domain is a little bit unique to most of the laws and statutes that we pass. Hopefully, we pass laws to keep people out of courts. We pass laws that will keep them on one side of the law or the right side of the law, and when they don't, we exercise those statutes. Eminent domain is a little bit different than that. It's designed to be in court. It is a court proceeding. This piece of legislation will be before a judge. It's not optional. It will happen. And the intent language was added for the simple reason that the policy should flow from the legislature. The intent of the legislature should be adhered to, and it shouldn't be the policy of a judge. And so to clearly spell out that intent is what this is for. I understand the history of the committee. This bill will not live and die by its intent, but I think in future generations, when a judge is looking at this, they see this is what they meant. This is clearly what they meant. This is black and white. We have no latitude. And therefore, I would suggest, plead, whatever the pleasure of the committee, beg, I'm not proud, that in maybe this only exception, that if this isn't done, somehow the intent of this legislature goes forward and lives with this statute in perpetuity.
Chairman, thank you. Mr. Chairman, I concur absolutely on this one. If it also would like me just to direct a question to Councillor McGuire, and just you've spent so much time with your legal acumen, are you comfortable that this intent language is adequate and goes even far enough in saying what we want to do here?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, yeah, I am. I think, again, you know, there's a lot more that could be said, but I think this summarizes the really salient points, and I think it's, you know, one of the other things you don't want to do is overwhelm a statute with page upon page of legislative intent, but I think this gets at the crux, it gets at the case site, it gets at the findings and why it's necessary for us to pass it, so yeah.
And then one follow-up there. So in your company, I'm looking for legal counsel here, you're comfortable that also that just even saying this, this doesn't also then constrict us to where we could get too narrow an interpretation from a court with the fact we have put these specific intents in, but there's still latitude for the statute to be adequately interpreted.
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, yeah, because, I mean, I still think that a court is going to look to the plain language of the statute itself. And I think they'll take it in concert with the intent and findings, which is important. But that's where we really tried to pay attention, as I mentioned to you, the out clause of having the legislature, it should it enact, a way around it, the opportunity for folks to acquiesce, and those very specific provisions are in there. So I think I feel very comfortable, and this bill really has been through so many drafts at this stage that I feel comfortable that there's the right balance of legislative intent and findings that we really want them to pay attention to, but taken in concert with the very specific statutory language.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate the effort you folks have put into this.
It's your bill, too.
Like you guys, you all carried it.
All right, very good. Any other questions for the sponsor? Seeing none at this time, we can stay with this, that'd be great. If not, got your AD or somebody, so. Okay.
I just had a question to the sponsor. The last question was before she leaves.
Okay. I don't know if the sponsor's leaving.
or Craig.
Yes, sir.
You want Joy?
Oh, that's all right. Did you want? Would you be amenable to that amendment we discussed on Section E?
I think that'd be appropriate where you say if the landowner, excuse me, sir, if with your permission, if the landowner is
okay.
A receptive, absolutely. I think that strengthens the bill. I think that's a good move. Thank you.
Yes, please.
Representative Wyrick, I don't know if that's something you can do.
We can guide you conceptually.
Okay. Very good. We'll come to that later then. Let's go ahead and go to the public testimony. I see Sarah Gilbertson, but you want to speak to Amendment 1, is that correct, on behalf of Fishing Game? So we'll wait until we get to that amendment. Dave Feakin, the Alaska Association of Realtors. Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
And if you could tell us again, for the record, who you are and who you're affiliated with, please.
Sure. I'm Dave Feakin. I'm representing the Alaska Association of Realtors. I'm the legislative chair for the state association. I also have a national position with the National Association of Realtors on the Land Use, Property Rights, and the Environment Committee, and was a vice chair of a forum last fall that tackled the issue of eminent domain in San Francisco. Obviously, this is a very large issue for us, being part of the mantra of the National Association of Realtors, is the defense of private property rights. Within the committee I sit on currently, we are in the process of helping 38 states review their eminent domain laws. And it, we've addressed it from the standpoint of three primary issues, which this legislation addresses, and we support the legislation. Those three areas are a concrete definition of public use, a concrete definition of eminent domain, and thirdly, to, in the issues of eminent domain, move that to the level of elected officials, remove the quasi-government official, the situation that happened in New London, Connecticut. In national surveys, it's indicated that 94% of the people are opposed to what happened in the Kelo case, private-to-private taking for economic development. In Alaska, we're probably unaware of the amount of eminent domain cases or takings that's going on in the country, but there are currently in excess of 10,000 private-to-private for economic development eminent domain cases in the United States of America. So this is not a light issue across the country. We support House Bill 318, but we understand you'll never get everything you want. We're at 90% probably, and maybe I'm jumping ahead because I realize there's an amendment coming, and speaking to some of that amendment clarifies one of our issues that we have grappled with is the issue of recreational property. And Representative McGuire used the figure of less than 1% of the state, that's the same number we have, is in private hands. The issue comes up with us on recreational property, or maybe I should put second homes, personal property, that sort of thing. And within the real estate industry, 25 to 30% of that industry is now second homes. Many of those are occupied for 90 days. So this is the issue that we've been grappling with, and on page 4, the subsection C at the bottom of that possibly could solve some of the issues we've got if you struck subsection C where you're using, where you've taken out the seasonal recreation for temporary purposes. I'm trying to come up with a figure, but we're estimating that it's in the neighborhood of 40% of that 1% within the state of Alaska is probably recreational property at this point. But also, you know, we're a growing state. 20 years ago, the valley was probably recreational property. An enormous amount of it were recreational cabins for people that lived in Anchorage that are now primary residents. In light of that, plus the fact you have so many people that have second homes. I'm from Kenai. I live on the Kenai Peninsula. A very large percentage of the homes on the Kenai Peninsula are probably not primary residents. But I doubt that Tiger Wood would like you taking his house. He lives in 90 days out of the year. And, you know, the lifestyle of a lot of us is we have more than one primary residence anymore. So I'm not sure how to address that. That was a thought that Wendy and I just had. The 90-day thing I think you can live with. I don't know how you enforce it, but it's something that you can deal with. But understanding that the housing market of today, that many people have more than one primary residence. Is our point. The second point in addressing, again, that amendment number one that you haven't heard yet, on the issue of trails and paths and access areas, another Kenai Peninsula example, there is property on the Kenai River that was developed years ago by the Salamanoff Native Corporation and put on the market. It had, I believe it was a 20 or 25 foot easement across the back of the property on the river. At that time, they had to discount those properties from around $55,000 to $35,000 to get them to sell because of that easement. Then the public started using the easement and trampled down the habitat, plus they were camping in the backyard of primary residences, and Fish and Game and U.S. Fish and Wildlife came along and said, there's habitat damage, and you, Mr. Property Owner, need to fix that, not the people that trampled it down and partied in these people's backyards. So public outcry, Fish and Game and U.S. Fish and Wildlife closed the access to that. So I'm cautioning to be very careful about these public recreation accesses because it addresses people's quality of life. It addresses their ability to use their private property. And of all importance, it will dramatically decrease the value of those properties if you were to allow the public back in there to access. I mean, there was problems with people partying in the backyards at 3 o'clock in the morning. And so addressing those issues very carefully, understanding that the word recreation means something different in all parts of this state. So that concludes our testimony, and if you have questions, we'd be.
Okay, very good. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Did this issue come up in the judiciary? Did you testify?
No, I was out of town then.
Okay. Right. Thank you for your testimony. Let's go on then to. Looks like we're on teleconference now with Ron Estrada.
Hello?
Ron?
Yes.
Yes, sir. Can you tell us where you are?
I'm Ron Estrada, and I own a piece of property in Block 2, the town site in Fairbanks. It's where I've lived for the last 22 years. And the city wants to take it away from me and build the Morris Thompson Center there, which I don't have any money to move or any place to move to. And they sent me a pamphlet that said that they were going to get me something as good or better, but they think that's arranging financing for me. What they did is they paid off the appraiser to say the property was worthless, and I can't find any property like that for what they want to give me for. It's about a quarter of what I've got invested in it. And I called all the appraisers in Fairbanks and all the outfits in Anchorage, and I was only able to find one person that would work for me and not for the city. They were all willing to work for the city, but I only found one that would work for me, and he wants $10,000. I had five properties that were paid for when this started, and now I've got to pay $15,000 to $50,000 for an attorney, and $10,000 for an appraiser, and so I've had to sell two pieces of property and take out a loan on another, and that's still not enough money, so I'm going to have to take out a loan on the other one. Now, if I lose my house, all I'm going to be left with is two houses that the bank owns. And Satterberg is kind of nervous about this legislation that's going in, and he's pushing me to sell it before next Wednesday. So if you guys could push this through kind of quickly, it would help me out. I don't know what else to say.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that testimony, Ron. I don't think we can push this bill through that quickly, so you may want to talk to one of your representatives from Fairbanks, and here's one of them right here, Richard Holm.
Yeah, Ron, this is Jim Holm. Thank you very much for calling. As you can plainly see, this is the reason that we're trying to get this bill through. Under the current scenario, is there any appeals process available to you?
Not that I know of. It's Satterberg pretty much says we either take what we're offering or we're going to take it for nothing.
So we don't. Okay. Well, we'll have that discussion. So, thank you very much for your testimony.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. We'll go on to the next person online, Rod Arnold, the Alaska Outdoor Council.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This Rod Arno. I live in Palmer, and I'm the executive director for the Alaska Outdoor Council, which has been concerned with access to public lands in Alaska prior to statehood. So, you know, we've been in the arena a long time. Our concern is, you know, an example of it would be like in Mat-Su Borough that has developed lake management plans. You know, we see a borough that has the authority and has taken it to restrict access to public waters that, you know, we feel we have a constitutional right to, but they say that the property owners and the residents then can determine access to public waters. So we have property owners restricting access to public lakes, and we're concerned then about losing that ability to access those public waters, even, you know, through paths, trails, roads, or, you know, access to that waterway. So we do, the Outdoor Council does support Representative Holmes' Amendment number one. The paths, trails, roads, site, you know, for reasonable access to public properties. And, you know, we understand the concerns here, and, you know, we're thankful that Representative McGuire has gone, you know, to the effort to try to draft this, and we just would like to make sure that the amendment that makes sure that we can allow all Alaskans can continue to access public waterways is ensured. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Arnold. Any questions? Seeing none, we do have some amendments coming up that may address some of the issues that you mentioned, so we'll see how they turn out. Okay, I have someone else online.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Just a quick question for Mr. Arnold.
Hey, Mr. Arnold, are you still with us?
Yeah, maybe Fish and Game can answer the question.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I'm just. Well, let me just see if there's anyone else to testify. Anybody else here? I know Ms. Gilbertson wants to on one amendments. Okay, seeing no one else, then let's go ahead and close the public hearing. And any discussion? Go ahead, Representative.
I was just wondering if there was an example of which private land was trying to get access public waters. And I guess my concern is whether it's Native Corporation land or Native allotment land, or how does that work?
Ms. Gilbertson?
Because I think his concern was private land and not public land access.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Sarah Gilbertson. I'm Special Assistant to the Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Through the Chair, Representative Joel, I am familiar with what's going on in the Mat-Su, and I believe that Mr. Arnaud was primarily speaking about private lands and some borough management plans, both of which are affecting and prohibiting public's access to lakes in many cases in the Mat-Su. But as you know, there have been problems with public access at O'Brien Creek with Chitna. There have been problems on the Sea Tuck. So this is something that we see throughout the state.
It's got general application, even though it may be intended for a specific area right now. My understanding of the way it's written, it's got general applicability.
Yes.
Maybe I'm jumping the gun though on amendment number one. I'll wait till amendment number one is brought up and then ask the question.
Okay, very good. Any other questions before we get into the amendments? Tina, thank you, Ms. Gilbertson. You may want to stay. Go ahead and stay there.
I'll stay here.
See, you want to talk about amendment one, mm-hmm. Right? Okay. All right, let's go to amendments. Looks like we have a new amendment one. Is that correct?
Thank you very much, sir. Chairman Meyer, I move new amendment number one. New.
Is that
a new one?
And that's the one, Mr. Chairman, just so that that doesn't have. Oh, new. Okay.
It should say on top.
Yes. That's right.
Okay. And we do have an objection for discussion purposes. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to request that Ms. Gilbertson speak to the new amendment number one, since I entertained this in her behalf.
Okay.
Go. Mr. Chairman, if I might, on behalf of the sponsor, we work very closely with Representative Holm and the department, and just so everyone's clear, the sponsor has no problems with this amendment. So I wanted to make sure that that's not a consideration for anyone here. The sponsor is fine with this amendment.
Thanks.
Okay, very good. Ms.
For the record, Sarah Gilbertson with Fish and Game, and I also want to thank Representative McGuire's office, Craig especially, and Representative Holm. They've all worked not just with the Department of Fish and Game, but with the Department of Law and the Department of Natural Resources over the last several weeks on this issue. And it's interesting because I am taking a break from a two-day ANOCA class to come up here and talk to you about this amendment, but one of the things that strikes me is the great lengths that Alaskans went to when ANOCA was going through Congress to maintain access to lands in Alaska and waters in Alaska. And it is in that same spirit that today I want to talk about access, because this amendment is about maintaining, preserving, establishing the necessary access for Alaskans to their public lands and waters. And as most of you probably know, the state has a responsibility under the public trust doctrine to ensure that all Alaskans can access public lands and waters. This amendment would maintain the state's current ability to use eminent domain. That's an ability that we've had for 45 years, but only under very narrow circumstances, and that would be when no other reasonable alternative access exists, and only when necessary to preserve or establish access to public lands and waters. And to the state of Alaska, it's very important that when Alaskans come to us because they cannot access public lands or waters for a variety of reasons, or in this example, when 15 legislators write the governor, as happened last April, referring to O'Brien Creek, that we have the tools necessary to be able to respond to those concerns and ensure access. So that's what today's amendment is about, and I believe that John Baker from the Department of Law, who handles many of the state's access issues in the Mat-Su Borough and elsewhere, can also answer questions on this issue.
Yes, we do have Mr. Baker online for questions. That's correct.
And follow up? Go ahead.
Well, so now we're out of the area of private-private. We're no longer in Kilo with this. This is expanding the state's authority for eminent domain. Am I right?
Through the chair, Representative Pertula, and we might want to go to John Baker, but what we wanted to do here, the state already has eminent domain authorities and abilities, and what we wanted to do here is preserve those in these very narrow circumstances when it's necessary to ensure a trail or pathway to a public land or water. And we wanted to make it very clear that we cannot use that eminent domain authority for a recreational trail, so something that's optional like a bike trail or a hiking trail. We are merely talking about transportation from one point to another for the use of the public land and water.
Mr. Baker, did you want to add to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is John Baker with the Department of Law in Anchorage, and I represent the Department of Natural Resources and Department of Fish and Game. In answer to Representative Curtula's question, the answer is yes. This amendment speaks to not to a private-private transfer. This would not be preserved in order, the power of eminent domain would not be preserved under these narrow circumstances in order to effect a private-private transfer. It would be when there is literally no reasonable alternative access and the state is attempting to preserve or establish access for the public to remain in public ownership, and the use of the publicly owned land or water to be accessed may be recreational, but the land that be taken would not be for recreational purposes.
Okay. Very good. Thanks, sir. Representative Curtula, you have a question?
Yeah. Okay. Tell me what this adds that we don't have now. John?
Yes, Mr. Baker.
Oh,
can you hear the question from Ms. Representative Curtula?
Representative Curtula, through the chair, the amendment is designed to attempt to provide a narrow exception to the new restriction on the use of eminent domain that would be affected by Section E on page 4, beginning at line 10, page 4 of House Bill 318. So it would only be necessitated by the new restriction, which itself would only apply in narrow circumstances to the use of eminent domain that is a part of this bill.
Go ahead.
So are you saying that it basically returns us back to what we have now?
Representative Catrulla, through the chair, it's an attempt just to narrow the restriction so that in these extremely narrow circumstances where it's necessary just to preserve or establish public access, that ability wouldn't be completely precluded.
But what I'm saying is, currently, if we didn't have the bill, are we going any further than what the current law is on access? I mean, I tend to be very sympathetic on this, but that's what I want to understand. Without the bill, wouldn't we have the same kind of access right, or would we not? I see what you're saying.
Representative Pertula, through the chair, if I understand your question, this amendment would not be extending any powers of eminent domain that do not exist now.
Thank you.
Justin, do you have something to add?
Yep. Mr. Chairman, Representative Curtula, I think if it does anything, it narrows what we have now and makes it less restrictive and more difficult for the department to exercise eminent domain. It is not the intention of this bill to restrict any existing or to change any existing policies on eminent domain with the exception of those. This amendment clarifies that this would reinstate what the department already has with somewhat of a more narrower focus.
Does that help? That help?
Well, and thanks, Mr. Chairman, for giving me just a little latitude.
Sure.
What we've done is we've knocked it out in Section E. We've taken away the right of access, and then we're attempting to put back that access. And that's what I'm just trying to tell, because of some of the problems, and specifically with native land, you know, whether we're still in the same ambit that we are today if the bill didn't exist. And that was what I was getting at. I think what I heard Mr. Baker say is that's right. We're not reaching further than the rights that we currently have. So if that's true, then I think I'm satisfied. Is that right, Mr. Baker, just one more time?
Representative Catrulla, through the chair, I certainly believe that's correct, and I believe that that's the view from the sponsor's office as well.
Could I ask just one? So knowing the problems with some of the cases, and the DIPNET comes to mind, would this have changed anything with that? It would not, would it, then, if it doesn't change the laws it is today?
Representative Petula, through the chair. Well, another aspect of eminent domain that would not be disturbed by any part of this bill is that it would still remain the burden of the state to make a finding that it's necessary to take the land in question, and that would still remain the state's burden. I think it's accurate to say that this bill, and with this amendment, would not change the situation on the ground, or the burden that the state would have to exercise eminent domain in the situation at Chitna.
So finally, promise. So that's because you'd have to prove the public use. You'd still have to prove the public purpose to be able to get there. Am I right?
Representative Catrulla, through the chair, that's correct, and that's a feature of eminent domain that would not be disturbed by this bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. And the sponsor's shaking his head yes also, so I think you're safe on that one. President Jewell, do you have a question?
No.
Okay. Very good. Okay, anything else on amendment number one? I think Representative, you had objected.
I didn't
move it. You removed the objection. Okay, very good. And amendment one, new amendment number one, will be adopted. Or is adopted. Okay, let's go to amendment number two also.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number two.
I'll object to which is a discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment number two deals with the kind of a technical amendment in the sense we go from primary to personal and trying to make it consistently that, that what we're dealing with here is personal property, not primary. And so that's what Amendment 2 in essence does.
Very good. Any questions on Amendment 2? I'm satisfied. I'll remove my objection. Representative Petula, you object or just a question?
Well, I guess I'd object just to ask for an answer. So what we've done here, the chair, is now we're going to it's any personal property, and that's not a house anymore, is it? I mean, have we broadened it that far out or not?
Well,
what's that? Mr. Johnson.
Through the chair, Representative Petula, we have, because in the definition section, we've defined it as personal dwelling, et cetera, et cetera. This really is a couple places we've referred to it in the bill as personal and other private, and I think this basically just cleans it up and adds consistency all the way through. I don't think it changes anything of any substance because we've defined it in the, so it really doesn't change the big scope of the bill. Is that
in the definition?
Yes, yes, is that? Thank you.
Okay, good. Let's keep your objection. Representative Hawker has a question.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Johnson, perhaps in this context where we've got Amendment number 2 in front of us, could you address the sponsor's perspective on the comments offered by the realtors on desiring to include in the definitions of personal residence as recreational property?
Through the chair, if I might, Representative Hawker, this bill is, I think everyone that testified would probably come up here and say this is, we agree with 90% of this bill. The policy decision that the sponsor, where she decided to land was the home, and that's where the focus was. With an area around that, this bill started with 1,000 feet, which was 80 acres. It was narrowed down to take in about a 5-acre plot. So it was primarily done as to protect someone's home. Whether or not philosophically to protect all private property would be ultimately a good thing or bad thing, that's the policy of the legislature. The goal of the sponsor was to basically protect someone's home under narrow definition, because there's other people out there that are going to be 90% supportive of the bill with the exception of this. There are people out there that are 90%. This bill doesn't make anyone jump up and down and be terribly happy. No one is happy with everything. And I think maybe that's one of the clues that we may have a good bill. There's some compromises everywhere. There's been countless hours spent. I think all the parties have been on board. Everyone from the conservation voters have had input, the realtors, all the way across the board. So I think what we have with home is a compromise, and that is the perspective. But the Representative McGuire believes that the home is the greatest use and very strongly wants to keep that in there. Is it more important or less important than all recreational property? You're gonna argue that for a long, long time. This is where we decided to settle, or the sponsor decided to settle, was protecting a primary residence encompassing the real estate around it. Does that answer your question and the concept behind it?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, actually, yes, it does specifically answer my concern. This is important that we had a discussion on the record. I would, at this point in the evolution of the bill and also this point in our progress in managing the state statutes, I think I concur with the sponsor's conclusions at this point.
Okay. Very good. Any other discussion on Amendment 2? Let's see. Can you remove your objection?
Yes.
Okay. Objection has been removed. Amendment 2 is adopted. Amendment 3.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment number 3.
I'll object.
Mr. Chairman, all this does is it takes the word law and makes it statute rather than law, and that's just we've heard from our legal folks that by law is a rather ambiguous term, and that by statute is a very much, it's a correct way to phrase it. Is that correct? I think our attorney could speak to that.
Through the chair, Representative Holm, Department of Law got this amendment just shortly before this proceeding. We have had a chance to examine it. I think before we speak to this, we'd like to take a little closer look to verify that this doesn't in some unintended way restrict the practice of eminent domain in some manner. So I'm not able to take a position on that at this time.
Go ahead. Just to this point, Mr. Chairman, it just caused me to wonder. I think I concur with where the intent is going, but to the point it says statute here, and I don't have enough of a broad concept of the structure of law overall here, but would that also then mean that it must be a statute, which is something that the state does, that it does this exclude ordinances, which are what municipalities do? And would that be of consequence?
I couldn't offer a legal opinion to that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
My staff isn't here. Maybe we could set this to one side for a moment.
Oh, there it is.
Can you come forward, Counselor?
Mr. Chair, with your permission, I think Mr. Baker might have been, it's been suggested that Mr. Baker might have an answer to that question
sure.
as well
yeah.
online.
Mr. Baker, I believe, was the one that we talked about.
Let's go to Mr. Baker first. Mr. Baker, did you hear the concern Representative Hawker had?
Mr. Chairman, I think I'm kind of in the same situation as Mr. Putz here. I just saw this recently, too. I guess I could note that I think it was mentioned, perhaps in Mr. Putzer's testimony, that Article 1, Section 18 of this Constitution and at least one other constitutional provision do mention eminent domain. So I suppose if someone were going to take an overly formalistic view of the law, they could argue that it's trying to, that it somehow affects constitutional authority for eminent domain. But this, I have to confess that I'm haven't had really a chance to look at this, and I'm more or less talking off the top of my head.
Okay. How about your trusty staff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, maybe Tim.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Tim Lacken, staff to represent Jim Holm. This amendment was offered in light of potential ambiguity as regards the exercise of power of the legislative branch in determining a definition for public use, as opposed to a public agency or by regulation in the absence of a statute to make that definition.
Okay. Representative Hawker, does that help you?
Mr. Chairman, actually, it leaves me a tad befuddled because I definitely agree. I don't like law being imposed by regulation. That is particularly troublesome in many cases, but I worry. We don't have enough of a counselor's opinion on whether to change the word law to statute here might in some way be attempting to override kind of this the gentleman on the air just brought up either the Constitution or other legitimate law promulgating body actions of assemblies and councils. So I would ask perhaps a question to the maker of the amendment. This is one we ought to get clarified a bit more and either consider it further as a potential floor amendment.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman.
Sure, sure.
Representative Hawker, I agree with you. It's my intention here was to make this narrow application, not just an ambiguous application. So, obviously, if it does create, as is possible, some ambiguity by virtue of the fact that we put it in statute or remove some of the capabilities that we want to have as eminent domain or the use of eminent domain, then I obviously don't want to do that presently either. So, if
let me try something. Mr. Putzer, do you think we could get an answer by Monday on this question, this method?
Yeah. May I make a suggestion?
Go ahead.
When I listened to the bill being introduced and how it would take a bill past 60 people in the legislature before something could be approved in terms of a taking plan in line with the overall purposes of the bill, if you were to read the amendment in the context of what the, both the sponsor of the bill intended and what the statute in the bill says, that it would be the intent of this amendment that the statute would be part of the statute that the legislature would pass, not something that would be defined by regulation, by case law, or by the Constitution. It would be part of the bill adopted by the legislature later on. So when it says statute, that's very clear. That's a legislature-passed statute bill. When it says regulation, that's very clear that that's an administrative action. This is a legislative action.
Well, I guess, Mr. Chairman, if I could, that is my point. I mean, that's, I would like to have it be by statute rather than by regulation. So if this isn't the right way to present it, I certainly can't speak to that.
Mr. Chairman, when you say statute, you mean by legislature.
That's correct.
You do not mean by the executive branch.
That's correct.
Representative Warrock, is that a minor change we can make to this amendment?
No, I don't think so. I think that's just the way the drafter of the statute amendment needs it. That's the way I view it.
That's the way I think, Mr. Chair. Is there some way, Mr. Chair, did you plan on not passing the bill out today, or?
Well, my thought process was that Representative McGuire may not have too many more days with this, so I didn't want to hold this over too much longer.
No.
But I do know Representative McGuire has an amendment that we can either do conceptually or...
it's easy to do conceptually.
Or if we hold it over, you can have it.
I can just say it.
Okay. I guess my concern would be on Amendment 3 that... there's still some ambiguity there or some concern that hey, pass an amendment that's not what you intended. So we could do two ways. We could go ahead. I it's clear to me, but unfortunately we don't have legal counsel to support that. But we could skip this amendment. You could make it on the floor. We could make the amendment.
I think that might be helpful, is just to maybe withdraw this amendment for the moment, and then if we get clarity by the time it gets to the floor, we'll make it as a floor amendment.
All right. Mr. Chairman, also, we'll support, Representative McGuire would support that and help in any way that we can to make that happen. And so
all right, then with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll withdraw Amendment Number 3.
Amendment Number 3 is withdrawn. Okay. Amendment Number 4.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Amendment Number 4. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Amendment number 4 is takes it away from personal property in the sense of residence to also include a home, or not a home, but a business, which is not a small business, which is not, no one lives on that small business, but it is personal property. And let me remind the one of the things that we don't talk about, or we do talk about, but it's very clear to me, it may not be clear to a lot of people, is what rights truly are. And rights are the inherent rights that cannot be taken away from you. And in our country, we have what's called, and it is the first country of an ownership society, whereby people have private property and people have the ability to use that private property for their own benefit and goodwill. And it seems to me that we don't want to have a position where a small business is losing its property and losing the person is losing their welfare in favor of large business, which just happens to want to take the property and has the ability to do so, whether it be a Walmart or any other large business that's moving into an area, which maybe a local area might feel is a far better movement for their economic benefit, but not to the benefit of those who are going to be displaced. So that was the purpose of Amendment Number 4, and I would urge your passage.
I'd object only for discussion.
Yeah, I'd object. Go ahead, Representative Hawker.
Just a query, again, for the maker of the amendment. A definition of small business means a structure that is the primary location of a business. again, we get just questions, detailed questions again. Structure, I would presume, means a physical building of some kind or a stuff constructed on a property. And then the question is, and this is another one of those cases, should this just be primary or should this be include just generally location?
Through the chair, Mr. Chairman, I don't know primary, I don't know if that word is the right word to use. If you have a business, I don't know if it's your primary business, but the idea was that it's not a whole bunch of businesses, that it was just a person's small business. You have to have, you'll notice it employs fewer than 26 people, and it's located on land subject to eminent domain that's not less than 1 year, so it's been around for a spell, and it wasn't constructed for the purpose of avoiding eminent domain. It's not a van. It's not a trailer that's just been hauled on there. It's something that's truly a business.
Yes, at this point, I'm sure I have to
represent Stoltz and then represent your tour. Thank you. Is to represent Holm or any of the lawyers in the house in this small business. You can have to define by structure, but when you can see small businesses in my area, they're agricultural entities. I guess I'm trying to get at your intent, sir.
Well, the intent is that it's a person's business, that it is your private property, whether it be an agricultural piece of property or not, is I think immaterial. It's also defined by the number of people that you employ, the size of the business. If you're not employing more than 26 people, it satisfies the small business.
Okay, go ahead. I just thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm just confused by the term using structure, because you can have a parcel without a structure on it that has. But it's a business, whether it's a potato field I don't want to unintentionally exclude something that might be important in both of our areas.
Well, my guess would be that when you deprive somebody of a structure, it's one thing. If you deprive them of land, you actually are selling that land. The land isn't being destroyed. It still has kept its value. But if you take the structure away, it has an ongoing value that's destroyed. And then somebody has to build another structure, whereas land doesn't quite fit into that category, my way of thinking.
I see the push of development in the Mat Valley, and probably in the Tanana Valley. That's where potato fields. But I know people that are sitting on land that they can subdivide for millions of dollars, and they're just scratching out livings on it. I'd feel real remiss in duties here if I didn't address that. And it's, maybe I don't have a valid concern, but I hate to protect one category of business while excluding another. That's an area real near and dear to me.
Okay, your staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I think Mr. Lampkin wanted to say a couple words.
Mr. Lampkin, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Once again, Tim Lampkin, staff director at Holm. Just to attempt to clarify, I believe the structure is referenced to help measure the 250 feet. Use that as a basis that there is a line drawn for that. Take it. The intent behind the amendment is also the spirit of a small mom and pop business. That not only are we trying to protect someone's home, but also if we're talking about the taking of someone's livelihood, this is what we're trying to accomplish by this amendment.
Mr. Johnson, did the sponsor see this amendment?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, she did. The policy call of the Judiciary Committee was to deal specifically with a home. This is a very valid point, and is a business take a higher priority over home? That's a policy call for this committee. The Judiciary Committee was fairly firm on it being a home. I might add that this is in the section for recreation, so we're talking about taking a business for recreation. Along with that, there must be necessity. The typical fixes at eminent domain are the typical requirements of eminent domain. I have, it is a structure to be taken for recreational purposes. There are some examples that this would prohibit that are very good. The Department of Fish and Game have come up with. I guess to answer your question is, Representative McGuire is not going to oppose this amendment based upon the policy decision of this committee. However, it was not the original intent of the bill to address businesses, and I think potentially some of the pitfalls that might come from that, but certainly supports this committee's desire to pass out a piece of legislation that works for the state.
Okay, Representative, do you want to follow up on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, it crosses my mind. Representative Stoltz was speaking a moment ago about land and how it affected him. A number of years ago, trails groups took a great number of acres of land for people in our area through the course of just using them, and eventually, of course, people are by adverse possession. They would take this land, and I'm very sensitive to that, and so I appreciate his concern because I certainly don't want to see a situation where we have adverse possession or we have a situation where people lose their livelihood just because something goes right through the middle of their property.
Okay, on that point, then I want to go to Representative.
And thank you on that point. I think this is a good amendment, and I'm not criticizing the amendment. I just want not wanting to miss an opportunity to see if there might have been enhanced, but I think I can't figure out how to do it right now. We have more time in the process, and that's, if we have a bicameral system, this will be on the table. So thank you.
Okay. Representative Couture.
My question was just to ask if I was reading it right, that this is just applying to the recreation section, and if you think that you got that answered. So it really isn't the Walmart situation. I mean, this is just the recreation section.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, that's actually correct. That was incorrect in that.
Yes, I objected to this. I'm fine with the amendment. I just hope that small business as defined here is correct, or it's can meet the legal muster.
There was, Mr. Chairman, in earlier discussion, there was one other thing brought up, and this is the point of information that we made the equal protection part a small business versus a big business. Does someone come in and say, why am I not being protected equally over a small business? Why I've got 28 employees, why should I suffer? So I'm wondering, that was the only issue that was brought up, was equal protection. I'm not an attorney, there are some here. I want the committee to have all the information.
Okay. Legal counsel, you have a thought on that?
No.
Is this, defining small business like this, is this equal protection, is this...
Mr. Chairman, again, we did get this amendment before the hearing, but it was very shortly before the hearing, and the one issue that we did identify and that we might need to explore further is the potential equal protection component that Mr. Johnson has identified, and I believe we would need to look into that further. There are other attorneys online who may have another comment on that, but that's all we've identified at this point.
Okay. Is there any attorneys online that have an opinion on this amendment and this definition?
Mr. Chairman, this is John Baker. I would just echo what Mr. Putzier said. We had identified equal protection as an argument that someone might make in the future, but we just, it's speculative at this point.
Okay. Representative
Cotullo. So, if you've got an equal protection argument here, are we potentially opening the door to large businesses that say you don't have any reason for doing this for a small business and not doing it for us? Is that the argument?
To the chair, Representative Curtula, yes.
Okay, that worries me. Thank you.
Representative Holt, are you worried?
I'm not worried, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I
you know, in essence, what we're saying, we're talking about equal protection for people that own a business versus equal protection for people that own a house. So I guess what I'm saying is that we're trying to protect both. Now, if in fact it's a small business, a large business, whether it is or isn't, this was only done for the purpose of protecting the mom-and-pop businesses. If that's not what we're worried about, if we're worried about any business in the state of Alaska, that certainly could be acceptable to me as well.
But then I think you'd want to change your amendment.
That's correct.
Representative Hawker.
In the interest of taking this idea further, Mr. Chairman, there's certainly a policy call in front of us and a great deal of merit to recognizing the sanctity of a person's business property as well as their residential property. That's their livelihood. And that was Representative Stoltz, I believe, very, very correctly pointed out. In the agricultural world, your business is the entirety of the productive asset, the productive land. It's not the barn, it's not the house, it's not the tool shed. It is the productive land, and that is the business. And if we were to be seeking to make that policy decision to protect the small business, would we not be better off looking at language? And it'd be a fairly simple change here that they were on line 12 of this amendment where it describes small business means, but instead of calling the business a structure, lawyers help me, but I'm a poor accountant that helped you with this, but means real property that is the strike primary location of a business. The small business means real property that is the location of a business that, and then we set the criteria, employs fewer than 26, the business has been located on the land that is subject to the proceeding, and then we'd have to do something with C, basically saying you can't have established the business in a manner to avoid an imminent condemnation. But I'd throw that out for conversation that it would get towards the issue Representative Stoltz raised.
I think that's a good point. Mr. Johnson, any comments? By the way, has the sponsor of the bill seen this?
Yes.
Okay.
And that goes back to, Mr. Chairman, it goes back to her point of it wasn't the intent of her original legislation to address this, recognizing the process and having a great amount of respect for the process, respects the ability to do that and would not oppose anything that doesn't inherently damage the original two intents of this bill, which were private to private and protecting a home. I don't think the sponsor have any trouble with enhancing.
Okay. Then if you could answer Representative Hawker's or comment on Representative Hawker's suggestion.
This is Craig speaking, Mr. Chair, and I haven't discussed this with the sponsor, but I could see a scenario where someone could start a business that included thousands of acres, that may be a hunting business, that they have access to huge amounts of land that we prohibit access to, that we have limited in doing that. I mean, in terms of the maker of the amendments. Wishes and desires to protect small businesses, I think that's perfect, but I could see a situation where you have three guides that own 20,000 acres or have access to that somehow through lease purchase that could prohibit this being used of huge pieces of real estate, and it's less than three people, it's less than 26 people. There's a structure which could be a tent, it could have been there for years and years and years. And you know, trapping cabins. So, you know, I just see pitfalls out there if you don't have some type of limitation, as I think the original maker of the amendment has. I'm entirely sympathetic to the goal and to the quality, but I just see that we might run afoul of that careful balance that we've tried to build into this bill by having no one entirely happy and 90 people happy with 90%, but nobody 100% happy. That's my only concern with broadening it to that wide.
Okay. Representative Holmes, this may be another one too that you just a suggestion that you might want to withdraw. Again, work with legal a little bit more on this, and then if you want to still move that, we could do it on the floor. I don't like putting off amendments to the floor, and if Representative Roper was here, he would have a fit. But the fact that I know the sponsor would like to keep this bill moving.
Well, I understand, Chair, but see, unfortunately,
this bill is probably one of the most important bills I think we may well pass this year, and okay. I find in our position here, we didn't hear this bill until now, so I appreciate your concern, but we are, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring these things up if I didn't think they were important.
Okay.
I suppose, the will of the chair, I'll be glad to withdraw the amendment, but I don't think it's possible to take personal property rights and say that your house is the only personal property rights that you have that should be not protected for eminent domain, so, or against eminent domain. So.
And Representative Holm, I don't disagree with you. I just think that equal protection worries me, and I think does legal counsel, and I think the sponsor's aid here. Am I saying that there's a concern here?
And Mr. Chair, once again, I don't want to go too far out on a limb as opposing this amendment. I think it's good, and the representative is not going to, in any form or fashion, go on a record to try to keep Representative Holm from doing what is probably a good thing. So I just see some pitfalls, and we'll once again commit to work with the sponsor, with the maker of the amendment, with the 15 or so attorneys that have already worked on this case. I have all of their numbers on speed dial, and they're so tired of hearing from me. But we'll continue to commit to work with them to make this happen. I do believe it is the desire of the sponsor to move this as expeditiously as possible for obvious reasons.
Okay. With that, Mr. Chair, I will remove amendment number 4.
Okay, thank you, Representative. Your amendment is very good, though, so hopefully you will get the answers that and then we can have legal counsel supporting the amendment that we do or don't pass. Okay, I think Representative Weirach had an amendment.
Mr. Chairman, this move the conceptual amendment to page 4, lines 10 through 14. Subsection D, that the drafter can take this conceptual amendment, but unless the person otherwise agrees, would be the language to add to the end of the sentence. And the purpose of the language, Mr. Chairman, is to not have a blanket prohibition on eminent domain of private property if the person owns that private property within that 250-foot circumference agrees to the condemnation, they can go ahead and sell it.
Okay. Jeff, for purposes of discussion.
Mr. Chairman, as the sponsor left, she indicated to me that she wanted to congratulate Representative Wire on a good catch, that was a very, very good amendment, and wholly supports it.
Very good. Can I remove my objection? Any other amendments? Bring forward. Okay. Seeing none, Representative Holm, please do follow up on your two amendments that have been withdrawn temporarily. But with that, if there's no other questions, comments, or amendments, Representative Foster.
I guess we're also going to have the 318 audit committee as amended with the exceptions to those who are individually
check it out. I'll object just for a comment that the way our floor process works, this is such an important bill that I'd like to see that I hope that it's all debated out without the at-ease, and so because it's the public record is so important on this issue that there's a commitment to discuss this all on the floor and not just the way the process sometimes unfortunately works, just the importance of this issue. That's the only thing I ask and remove my objection.
Very good. I'll just reiterate, I agree with that. I think this is a very a subject that does need to be discussed. However, I think that you do need to spend some time with legal counsel here working out the legalities of your amendment so that we're not tied up with that issue on the floor.
Okay. Yes, I do. Okay. Anybody else object? Bill passing committee. Seeing none, bill passes committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Okay. We are not meeting tomorrow. We will meet Okay, yes, we are meeting Monday. I have three bills, House Bill 150, House Bill 331, having to do with military on licensed premises, House Bill 357, statutory reference to disabilities. 357. House Bill 150, by the way, was radiological technicians. And then we'll also bring up the one bill we did not hear today, which was House Bill 234. I don't know if there's anything else that we're showing up. Okay. Representative Chenault will be joining us next week. I think, in fact, I think he's here today. Or he's coming in late this afternoon. And we'll be taking up the supplemental budgets starting Tuesday. Okay. Any questions? Anything else coming forward? Any? Oh, okay. No, we're adjourned.